Welcome to episode 80 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for the week of September 17th, 2007. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. In this week's pre-Interbike mainly news-only show, we have a ton of news for you, including the results of the Floyd Landis arbitration. Also, a bunch of racing news, including the Vuelta, the Tour of Missouri, the Tour of Britain, plus a bicycle recall, some new PETA ads that you may not have heard about, and more. So sit back, relax. If you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. The Fredcast is brought to you by Cambria Bicycle Outfitters, providing tons of excellent cycling products at excellent prices. And with a special deal for Fredcast listeners, why would you shop anywhere else? Check it out at www.thefredcast.com and click through the link there for the special Fredcast deals. Cambria Bicycle Outfitters, they outfit the world. Well, welcome back to the Fredcast, and thanks for listening, and thanks for staying subscribed. Well, this is David. It is just a couple of days before I leave for Interbike. I think you can hear in my voice, I'm excited. Every year when I get to go to the Interbike trade show, it is fun and it is exciting. And the great thing for Fredcast listeners is that I have the opportunity to bring the show to you, both the outdoor demo days as well as the indoor trade show, and I'm looking forward to that. We have a couple of special things that we're doing there. First of all, of course, just like last year, be going to the outdoor demo and demoing bikes and talking to manufacturers, and I'll bring those interviews and mini reviews to you as soon as I can. And then, of course, going to a couple of days of the indoor trade show, and I'll be looking for the products that you've been suggesting that I look for, and I'll also look for some that I know that you will find interesting. I've already set up a number of appointments, and I think you're going to like what we're going to be covering at the show. I'm probably going to be doing a little bit less photography at this year's show, mainly because lugging around the big camera with all my recording equipment and focusing on photography really was a distraction last year. I think what you really want to hear is the interviews and the product information. So we'll be doing that instead of focusing on photography this year. A couple of special things that I'm doing at the show, and I'm really excited about this. I get to be in the same room, in the same space with all of the regulars on the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast. So that means Carlton, Tim Grawl, Tim Jackson, Donna Tosi, and a number of special guests. I'm really looking forward to that. I've met Tim and Tim before. I've met Carlton before. I haven't had the chance to meet Donna in person, but each of those meetings have all been one-on-one, and I haven't had a chance to be with everybody together. So what we're doing, besides hanging out at dinner and things like that, is we are getting together for a live episode of the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast. We're going to be doing that Wednesday at the show in the Cycling.tv TV studio. And thank you to Cycling.tv for making that available, along with the folks at Interbike for helping to arrange that. We're going to be doing about a one-hour show. It'll be an audio show as well as a video show, so it's going to be a television show. We've invited on a number of cycling bloggers to join us as guests, rotating in and out. And we'll be talking a little bit about how the online bicycle community has evolved over the years and where they see it going in the future. And I think that should be a lot of fun. Plus, Carlton Reed from Bike Biz and QuickRelease.tv has been involved in a contest for YouTube videos. And the videos have all been submitted. And thanks to Shimano and New Belgium Brewery and some other sponsors, we'll be judging those videos at the show. And we'll be recording that in the TV studio as well. And I'm honored to be included among the judges for that. And that includes several of the spokesmen, as well as Rich Kelly from Interbike, who you heard on the Spokesman a couple of weeks ago. And we are in the company of greatness because our fellow judges also include Bob Roll and Phil Liggett. So we're really looking forward to that very much. So that's what's going on at Interbike. Expect to hear a lot from me next week. And by the way, that's one of the reasons why today's show is probably going to be a little bit short. I've been having some throat problems over the last week or so. You may hear it in my voice now. And so I want to get the news out to you, and then that's it, because I need to save my voice. I've got a lot of talking to do next week. So without any further delay, let's get into the news, because the first story is one that everyone has been looking forward to hearing, although I don't know that everyone's going to be happy with the result. So what result am I talking about? Well, the one that everybody's been looking for, the Floyd Landis case. You'll recall that Floyd Landis was the winner of the 2006 Tour de France, but then shortly afterwards, it was announced that he had tested positive with a higher than normal testosterone to epitestosterone level, leading to allegations that he was doping during the 2006 Tour de France. Nearly 4 months ago, a panel of three arbitrators in Malibu, California at Pepperdine University heard Floyd Landis's case, and it's now rendered a decision. And that decision was a 2-1 vote to uphold the results of the French testing lab, saying that Floyd Landis did use doping during the 2006 Tour de France, therefore leaving Floyd with just really one more place to go, and that would be the Court of Arbitration for Sport, which would be the final arbiter in this case. It is unclear at this point whether or not Floyd will appeal, but this decision does mean that Floyd Landis will be subject to a 2-year ban retroactive to January 30th, 2007. That means he will not be able to race until February of 2009. According to the general counsel for the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, or USADA, Travis Tigert, he said, quote, "Today's ruling is a victory for all clean athletes and everyone who values fair and honest competition." The decision totals 84 pages, and in it, the majority said that while the initial screening of Floyd Landis's urine at the French lab in order to measure testosterone levels, that test was not done according to World Anti-Doping Agency rules, but that the more precise and more expensive carbon isotope ratio analysis that we've all heard so much about over the last couple of months, that that was performed according to WADA rules, and it was that test that they used to base their decision finding Floyd guilty. Now, they did say that there were mistakes made at the lab, but they did not believe that the mistakes that were made were enough to dismiss the positive carbon isotope test. But they did say, quote, "If such practices continue, it may well be that in the future, an error like this could result in the dismissal of a possible future positive finding." In other words, all right, those of you at the French lab, you really didn't do things exactly right, but the way that you did them was acceptable to us. If you continue your potentially sloppy methods, then you may end up finding your results thrown out in a future hearing. Shortly after the decision was released, a news release came out from the law firm of Gibson, Dunn, and Crutcher on behalf of Floyd Landis. In it, they quoted Floyd as saying, quote, "This ruling is a blow to athletes and cyclists everywhere. For the panel to find in favor of USADA when, with respect to so many issues, USADA did not manage to prove even the most basic parts of their case shows that this system is fundamentally flawed. I am innocent, and we proved I am innocent." So while Floyd Landis and his team of attorneys and advisors pore over that 84-page report and decide whether or not they want to go to the Court of Arbitration for Sport in Switzerland, he is officially banned from cycling for 2 years. And because he was found conclusively by the panel to have used doping during the 2006 Tour de France, he is no longer considered the champion of the Tour de France. Later in the day today, the French organizers of the Tour de France bestowed the honor of winner of the 2006 Tour de France on Spain's Oscar Pereiro, who finished that race 57 seconds behind Floyd Landis. Said Pereiro, quote, "You never want to win a competition like that. But after a year and a half, I'm just glad it's over." Meanwhile, Tour de France director Christian Prudhomme said, quote, "According to the rules, the second place rider will be promoted to first place. We have waited a long time, too long. We said in the beginning that we were confident in the laboratory at Châtenay-Malabry. Now it is proven and confirmed that Landis cheated. As far as the Tour de France is concerned, Landis was no longer the winner after the positive test of the second sample. Pat McQuaid, president of the UCI, added his comments to that, saying, quote, "We can now say that Pereiro is the winner of the Tour without waiting for a possible appeal by Landis to the Court of Arbitration for Sport." So that is it. The Floyd Landis case appears over and done with unless they decide to go to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. We'll only know that over the next days and weeks. Speaking of Pat McQuaid and the Grand Tours, we talked recently about this ongoing battle that's been going on between the three Grand Tours, the Tour de France, the Giro d'Italia, and the Vuelta a España, and their desire to get out of the UCI Pro Tour and what the Grand Tours consider to be the UCI's restrictive rules regarding the Pro Tour and who gets invited to their races. And this dispute has been going on between the Grand Tours and the UCI for a couple of years now. Well, a deadline was set of September 21st by which the Grand Tours were hoping that the UCI would be able to come to some sort of a compromise. According to Pat McQuaid, quote, "We've sent proposals to the organizers of the Grand Tours before September 21st. We've agreed to meet their demands, which consists of no longer being part of the Pro Tour. We've been at loggerheads for the past 3 years, and it can't go on." So that sounds like potentially good news. But then, of course, the president of ASO, the company that runs the Tour de France, said that he is worried about these reforms, saying, quote, "They're extremely worrying as regards the future of cycling." We'll see what happens. But in the meantime, McQuaid has also said that the UCI is studying possible changes to the Pro Tour over the coming years. No idea of what those changes are or specifically what was in the documents from the UCI that went to the Grand Tours. As soon as we have more information on that, I will report it here on the Fredcast. Well, talking about Grand Tours, as you know, the Vuelta a España, the final Grand Tour of the year on the Pro Tour circuit, well, currently on the Pro Tour circuit, the Vuelta a España is ongoing and it will be ending this coming weekend. At present, leading after 18 stages of the Tour of Spain, Denis Menchov from Russia and the Rabobank team. In second place, 2 minutes and 27 seconds back, and looking like it's going to be tough for him to catch up to Menchov before they get to Madrid this weekend, is Cadel Evans from Predictor Lotto and Australia. Third place, Carlos Sastre, 3 minutes, 2 seconds back of Menchov. He's from Team CSC. In fourth place, 4 minutes, 1 second back, Samuel Sanchez from Spain and Euskaltel. And in fifth place, Vladimir Efimkin from Russia, 4 minutes, 27 seconds back. Now in the points series for the sprinter's jersey, currently in first place, Daniela Bonatti from Italy and Team Lamprey. In second, Alessandro Pataki from Italy and Team Milram. In third, Denis Menchov. In fourth, Eric Zabel from Germany and Team Milram. And in fifth place, from Predictor Lotto, Cadel Evans from Australia. In the King of the Mountains right now, Denis Menchov is leading in first place, followed by Jürgen von Gulen. In third, Carlos Sastre. In fourth, Franco Pellizotti. And in fifth, Vladimir Efimkin. The race will end this weekend, and when I do my first report from Interbike coming up next week, I'll be sure to give you the final results. A couple of notes of things that have gone out there on the road. The United States' Jason McCartney from Team Discovery did win stage 11, and that's fantastic. He is an up-and-coming rider. He certainly showed his mettle at this year's Tour of California, and I think we've got a lot to see from Jason in the future. Now, speaking of world-class athletes, Paolo Bettini, the current reigning road world champion, has left the Tour of Spain to rest up so that he can defend his world championship jersey at the World Championships next week in Stuttgart, Germany. Now, what's interesting about Bettini's abandon is that, first of all, and I believe we talked about this earlier, Bettini won the third stage of the race, and when he pulled out of this year's Vuelta, he was leading the points competition, the green jersey competition. So that was pretty significant for him as well as for Team Quickstep, and he's not planning to race again until the Road World Championships and the road race on September the 30th. Unipublic gave him special permission And Uni Publique is the organizer of the Vuelta, gave him special permission to wear his rainbow jersey instead of his green jersey on his final day of racing. Said Bettini, quote, "My objective right now is to try to win back the rainbow jersey again. Only those who have had the honor of winning the jersey can understand fully how it feels to wear it." The race director, Victor Cordero, understood how important wearing the rainbow jersey was for me, so I was delighted to be able to wear it for one last time. Having watched Bettini in person at the Tour of California, he is one class act, and he has definitely worn the jersey proudly and maintained the honor and tradition of being a world champion. So while there's plenty of other cyclists that I am also rooting for at the World Championships, I would not be disappointed if Bettini won it a second time coming up next week. I'll have more on the Road Worlds in just a couple of minutes. Now, in non-UCI Pro Tour action, there were two races that took place over the last week that I think really showed perhaps cycling's resurgence and emergence from the doping scandals of the last couple of years. We talked about this on the Spokesman Roundtable podcast a couple of days ago, and we all agreed that it was a great week for professional cycling. Now, the first was the Tour of Missouri here in the United States, and we talked about this last week. Judging by the number of fans lining the route, this was a great event, and it was won by George Hincapie of the Discovery Channel Pro Cycling Team. And this was Discovery's last race together, and so it was nice to see a Discovery Channel leader like George Hincapie take first place. Now, along with George Hincapie, his teammates, well, Tour de France champion Alberto Contador, as well as Levi Leipheimer and Yaroslav Popovich. So it was an all-star squad for Discovery at the Tour of Missouri. Said George, quote, "It was very important for us to have a strong team here and to try to get the win. Having basically most of the Tour de France team working for me was really special. I'll definitely miss those guys in the next couple of years." Interestingly, the team that won the team title at the Tour of Missouri was the team that is, well, at least in a lot of people's minds, is being tapped as the successor to Discovery Channel here in the United States, and that's Team Slipstream Chipotle. They won the team title with Discovery taking second place. So that, I think, shows sort of the handing off of the baton from Discovery to Slipstream Chipotle, and we'll see what they do next year with their all-star squad as well. Rounding out the top five in second place was William Frischkorn from Team Slipstream Chipotle. In third, Dominique Rollin from Kodak Gallery. Then David Canada from Prodir Saunier Duval. And then finally, Michael Friedman of Slipstream Chipotle. Interestingly, just a couple of notes. First of all, was the fact that on the last day of the event, as they were making their circuits around the streets of St. Louis, there were tens of thousands of fans out on the streets. What makes that interesting is that both the St. Louis Rams football team and the St. Louis Cardinals baseball team were having sell-out crowds at their games simultaneously, just a couple of blocks away. I think that that shows the popularity of cycling in the United States and the ability for cycling to continue with some of these grand tour type races like the Tour of Georgia, the Tour of Missouri, and the Tour of California. My next effort is to find out when the Tour of Utah will be coming back to United States cycling. Now, the other interesting thing that happened, and I had a couple of listeners send me some information on this, was the fact that in some of the larger towns and cities that the Tour of Missouri went through, there, despite the popularity of cycling, there were some local citizens who were complaining about the road closures. Now, that's going to come into play when we talk about the next major tour that happened that was a non-UCI Pro Tour event, and that was the Tour of Britain. And I was rightfully thumped by one of our very active British listeners who complained that last week I was talking a lot about the Tour of Missouri, but not about the Tour of Britain. I apologize to all of our UK listeners. I will not do that again next year because, of course, the Tour of Britain is a major race, and it was won this year by France's Romain Feillou. And what was really interesting was the way in which he did it, because a lot of times you get into these multi-day tours and you may be talking about a matter of 10, 15, 20 seconds at the end, or you may be talking about a matter of minutes. In this case, the difference between the first place finisher, Roman Feliu, and Spain's second place finisher, Adrián Palomares, was 0.49 seconds. That's extremely tight. As a matter of fact, the times at the end of the final stage were literally even. And the only way they could determine a winner was if officials went and looked back at the previous Sunday's prologue times. And at that point, they ended up awarding the winning jersey to Roman Feliu. Now, the reason I talked about roads and the issues that the fans had with the roads in Missouri is because there was also a problem with the roads in Britain. At one of the stages, there was a snafu that occurred between the race organizers and the local officials in the town in which they needed to go through, and a town that they needed to have the roads closed. And as the peloton headed toward that road, the roads weren't closed, and they had to stop the race, get the roads closed, and then restart as neutral in order to get the race going again. Hopefully this won't happen again next year, and hopefully it won't happen at other races, but it does point out, if you can imagine, as these racers are going through on some of these stages that can be 100 plus miles long, and they go through so many different towns and so many communities in all these different countries that we have cycling races, imagine the coordination that has to occur. And when things go off without a hitch, you have to think about how much went on in the background and how much planning occurred to make that happen. So I'm not pointing this out to, in any way, slight the organizers of the Tour of Britain. Instead, it just shows that when this doesn't happen on multi-day and multi-week events, how much effort has to go into the planning of these races. And I, for one, really appreciate all the work that they do and the amazing way that they're able to pull these races off so often without a hitch. Well, one race which so far doesn't appear that it's coming off without a hitch is the Cycling Road World Championships, which are taking place September 25th through the 30th in Stuttgart, Germany. So why do I say a race that hasn't even happened is already having some issues? Well, first of all, there is the ongoing dispute. I love saying ongoing dispute because whenever I say it, it's usually followed by between the UCI and then we have to fill in the blank. It could be UCI and WADA. It could be UCI and the Grand Tours. It could be the UCI and Floyd Landis. In this case, it's between the UCI and the Spanish Cycling Federation. And this all surrounds Alejandro Valverde. The UCI says that they have strong suspicions that Valverde was involved in the Operation Puerto drug affair. And as a result, the UCI has said that Valverde is banned from participating in the Road Worlds next week. For their part, the Spanish Cycling Federation totally objects to what the UCI is saying and has placed Alejandro Valverde on their country's roster. Now, as late as today, the Spanish Cycling Federation is asserting that Valverde will be on the roster and should be allowed to race. They've also said that they're going to appeal against the ban through the courts and the Court of Arbitration for Sport. Meanwhile, the UCI's president, Pat McQuaid, has written to Spain's sports minister to complain about the government's support for Valverde. In strong language, McQuaid said, quote, "We have the impression that there is an attempt to hide information on this case. I'm sorry to inform you that there exist strong suspicions about doping in your country. The situation is very worrying in Spain when compared with other countries." Preferring to not ratchet up the war of words, Spain's government-run sports council said that they continued to take a zero-tolerance approach to doping and that they would reply to the UCI's president in private. Kind of classy, don't you think? Nevertheless, we have yet to see whether or not Alejandro Valverde lines up for the start of the Road Worlds. It's going to be an interesting week. Meanwhile, in an attempt to try to stem what they consider to be the flow of doping in the sport, the UCI is taking some extra measures in their doping controls in Stuttgart next week. First of all, any blood samples that are taken at the doping control trailer are going to be stored and frozen so that later this year, when a test becomes available for testing growth hormones, they will then be able to retroactively test those blood samples in order to determine whether any of the athletes were using growth hormones at the Worlds. In addition, they're increasing the number of doping tests by 25% at the World Championships. Now, personally, I don't have a problem with them increasing the number of doping controls because I think you know my feelings about doping in cycling. I'm not quite sure yet how I feel about them storing the blood to retroactively test for doping, because just like in the Floyd Landis case where we waited almost a year and a half to determine whether he or Pereiro was the winner of the Tour de France, it's going to be kind of strange if somebody wins the World Championships and then later on at the end of this year, perhaps the beginning of next, finds out that, oops, sorry, you're not the world champion. Personally, I think if a test exists, then it should be used at the time of the race. And if there's a future test, I think that it should be used on future races. It shouldn't be used retroactively. Now, a couple of names that you will not see lining up at the starting line, some names that you're used to hearing when we talk about road races. First of all, Robbie McEwen from Australia. He's been left out of the Australian team, basically because, according to the selectors for the team, the course just didn't fit his style of riding. Meanwhile, Tom Bonin from Belgium will also be missing next week's Road Worlds, and he's missing them because of a knee problem. And while I know that my podcast goes all over the world because I hear from you everywhere, well, let's face it, I am an American. So for those of you that are interested, here's the American squad for this year's Worlds. It includes George Hincapie, Bobby Julich, Christian Vandevelde, John Devine, Danny Pate, and Tyler Farrar. They are going to race the road portion of the event, and racing the time trial portion of the event, David Zabriskie and Jason McCartney. And on the women's side, Kristen Armstrong, Amber Nebben, Christine Thorburn, Mara Abbott, Tina Pick, Lauren Franges, and Catherine Curie. Now, for those of you who think that Pro Tour riders and World Championship riders race fast on their road bikes, and for those of you who think that mountain bikes are usually slower than road bikes, well then, this story is just for you. A mountain biker from Austria named Markus Steckel now holds the world record for speed on a stock mountain bike. On September 13th, the Austrian rode an intense M6 faster than anyone has ever ridden a stock mountain bike before. He rode on a 1.6 kilometer ski slope with a 45 degree slope. And he rode at a speed of 210.4 kilometers per hour, or 130 and three quarters miles per hour, breaking his own 8-year world record by 23 kilometers per hour. I've put a link in the show notes to a YouTube video of the event, and you can't believe how fast this guy goes on a stock mountain bike. And interestingly, quoted after the race, he said, quote, "I was very calm. In fact, at the end of the course, I had the feeling that I was watching myself riding." Now, this ride was not without issues because during his practice runs, the visor in his helmet fogged up so that when he did the actual world record run, he held his breath for the entire 40 seconds. And quite honestly, going that speed, I think I'd be holding my breath as well. In addition to the video of this event that I've put in the show notes, there's also a link to another individual who was attempting a speed record on a stock mountain bike. And this one is not for the faint of heart, because in this one, while he's going at this just mind-blowing speed, the frame on his mountain bike broke. And this is the endo to end all endos. So if you're a little bit squeamish, I don't recommend that you watch that second video, but you can find the links for both in the show notes for today's show. You can find those at www.thefredcast.com. Okay, for those of you who have kids and like to ride them along with you on one of those trailer bikes, that's one of those ones that usually attaches to the back of your bike, probably in the seat post area, and then has a single wheel and seat and handlebars for the kids to pedal along behind you as you ride. Well, if you purchased one at REI, and it is a Novara Afterburner trailer bike, and if you purchased it between February and June of this year, well, then this is an announcement that you're going to want to listen to, because there has been a recall of this product. And specifically, the problem is that the trailer can detach from your bike, of course, posing a falling hazard for your kids, and that's something that you don't want. Now, about 5,200 of these were sold by local REI dealers around the United States, and they were manufactured in China. If you've got one and you haven't received a correspondence from REI, and I know a lot of people did, then obviously stop using it right away. REI does have a replacement part that has been tested and that will prevent this problem from occurring. So if you haven't heard from REI, contact them. I put a link in the show notes both to the REI recall information as well as to the Consumer Product Safety Commission's recall info. Contact your local REI, get the new part, and keep your kids safe. So have you heard about the new People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals advertisement? Oh, sure you have. I mean, it's been all over the news, right? No, not the one with Alicia Silverstone. The one with Levi Leipheimer. So while Alicia Silverstone is shown nude in her advertisement, we just get the naked head of Levi Leipheimer in his. Essentially, Leipheimer is doing a public service announcement, a print ad for PETA, specifically on the non-controversial subject of the necessity of spaying and neutering your dogs and cats. In the ad, Leipheimer is quoted as saying, quote, U.S. animal shelters must put to death nearly 4 million dogs and cats every year. You can help stop the cycle of unwanted animals. It's as easy as A for animal, B for birth, and C, control. Animal birth control saves lives. Always spay or neuter your animals and never buy them from a breeder or a pet store. You can find a link to the Levi Leipheimer advertisement in the show notes. And for those of you that are interested, there's also a link to the Alicia Silverstone ad. For you American listeners, in the U.S. state of Maine, it's time to listen up because there's new laws that cover bicycles in your state. First of all, beginning now, your child can be fined for not wearing a helmet while cycling. With this law, police have the ability to summon an offender, while in the past they could only issue warnings. The law now directs officers to warn a kid for the first offense, then issue a summons with a $25 fine for the second offense. But if you can show police that you've purchased a helmet before the fine is due, then you can have the fine waived. And I think that's a pretty good policy. A couple of other new laws in the state of Maine. First, if you're driving, cars have to give cyclists a 3-foot safety cushion as they pass them on the road, and it directs cyclists to stay on the right side of the road, but allows cars the ability, under certain circumstances, to cross a solid yellow line in order to pass a bicyclist safely and maintain that 3-foot margin. And I think that also is a great idea. Plus, the additional added benefit that you can now pedal up to your bank's drive-through window on your bike, and you won't be turned away. So for those of you in Maine, it sounds like there's a lot of great laws for you, and a lot of these make nothing but sense. My question is, can you also drive through the McDonald's on your bike? And so here ends the news for this week's edition of the Fredcast. So you know that we've been talking about the fact that we are sold out of Fredcast socks, and that we're working on the second limited edition of the Fredcast socks. And you'll remember that we got our socks from the Sock Guy, and I told you how comfortable and how awesome I thought Sock Guy socks were. Well, we're about to find out how even more awesome the guys at Sock Guys are, because Sock Guy is going to sponsor a contest here on the Fredcast. If you've got any design ability or any aspirations to design something for the Fredcast, listen up, here's your opportunity. We are going to have a contest. The contest is for you to design the next edition of the Fredcast socks. Now, you have between now and October 15th to email your design to thefredcast@gmail.com. And when you send that in the subject line, put sock design. What SockGuy is going to do is once we choose a winner, SockGuy is going to give you two free pair of the Fredcast socks, as well as other great prizes. And they're working on the prize list right now, but from what they've told me so far, it's going to be awesome and it's going to be well worth your time. So let's talk a little bit about SockGuy socks. SockGuy socks, the reason why I like them is they just feel great. They fit great. They're made of 75% microdenier acrylic wicking fiber, 15% nylon, and 10% spandex. And what's great, I've had a lot of different kind of cycling socks, and some of them, the cuff on them can bind and really can create, they're just not comfortable at your ankle. But all of their socks have a special non-binding cuff with what they call their exclusive comfort support band to ensure an easy fit on any foot. Now, one of the things that SockGuy is best known for is their stretch to fit sizing. And they do that by incorporating spandex into the body of the sock, and that creates what they call a perfect fit every time. Plus, on the upper, it's mesh so that they get a good cool airflow above your foot so that you get great ventilation and breathability. Plus, they double stitch the toe and the heel for extra strength and durability. And I've got SockGuy socks that I've had for years, and they just keep going. They're like the Energizer Bunny of cycling socks. Now, one of the things that they're best known for is their custom socks, and that's the program, of course, that we're working on. You can create custom socks for your club, for your team, for an event. They're all fully customizable in any style, any design, and any cuff height. The next socks that we make for the Fredcast are going to be the 3-inch cuff. The last ones were the 4-inch cuff. So keep that in mind. You're going to have a 3-inch area in which to get your designs. And one of the things is that you've got to remember that these are stitched, so your design can't be too intricate. So give it a try, design the next Fredcast socks, and it could be your design that wins, that gets out on all those socks on our limited edition next run, and you could be the winner of some great stuff from SockGuy. And if you're thinking, oh, gee, I'm just going to get socks, remember, SockGuy doesn't just make socks. They make arm warmers, base layers, shoe covers, booties, ski socks, snowboard socks. So there's just a lot of stuff that you have the potential of winning. As soon as I know what the prize package is, I'll let you know. But get your pencils, your colored pencils, and your pens out and start working on your design and send them to me at thefredcast@gmail.com. And make sure I get them by midnight Mountain Time here in the United States, October 15th. Good luck. I can't wait to see the designs that you guys come up with. And thanks, of course, to SockGuy for sponsoring the contest. Hey, do you remember a couple of months ago I reviewed the Graham Obrey movie, The Flying Scotsman? Well, I'm pleased to let you know that it is finally available on DVD, because I know that the movie was in sort of limited release, at least here in the United States. If you've been looking forward to seeing The Flying Scotsman, it is now available on DVD, and I've put a link in the show notes to where you can get it on Amazon.com. So go ahead and check that out. Now, coming up in San Francisco, actually ongoing right now and through September the 22nd, it's the Bicycle Film Festival. The Bicycle Film Festival is traveling all around the world celebrating the bicycle, and they have all kinds of films that you can go see. So today, I'm recording on Thursday, September 20th, but on Friday, September 21st, there are screenings at 7 p.m. and 9 p.m., and on Saturday the 22nd, there are screenings all day long. I put links in the show notes to the Bicycle Film Festival's website. You have until the 22nd to see it if you're in San Francisco. Following that, it heads to Vienna, October 4th through 7th, and then later in the year in London, Barcelona, Rome, Milan, Sydney, Melbourne, and Tokyo. So you have opportunities all around the world to check out the Bicycle Film Festival. But if you're in San Francisco, this is the weekend to check it out. Now, when I lived in Los Angeles, quite honestly, I didn't see a whole lot of bicycle commuters. LA is not the most bicycle commuter-friendly town. Admittedly, San Diego is, Orange County is, but the city of LA, not so much. Here in Utah, especially in Salt Lake City, I see bicycle commuters everywhere. And for those of you that are bicycle commuters or who aspire to be bicycle commuters, September 22nd is your day, because September 22nd is known as World Car Free Day. I've put a link in the show notes to the World Car Free Day website, but essentially it's exactly what it sounds like. Get out of your car and use alternative transportation on September 22nd. For me, that would be a bike, but for you, it might be using rapid transit or some other form of alternative transportation on September 22nd. So I'd urge you on that day, get out of your car, get on your bike, get on some alternative modes of transportation. And for some hints and ideas, go to the website and you can find a link in the show notes. Now, a few moments ago, I mentioned the fact that the Bicycle Film Festival will be coming to Melbourne down in Australia, but there's an even more exciting event that's coming to Melbourne, and that's the Melbourne Cycling Festival taking place the 19th through the 21st of October. One of our listeners mentioned that I should mention this on the show. When I checked it out online, he was absolutely right. This is going to be a great event. This is combining both the Jayco Herald Sun Tour Professional Bike Race along with the portfolio partners around the bay in a day ride. It's going to be a great event. It's going to be a great weekend, something I definitely think that you should check out. And if you're interested in doing the around the bay in a day ride, you can expect to be among 15,500 of your closest cycling friends, and you'll have a choice of four ride distances: 50K, 100K, 210K, or the challenging 250K. I've put a link in the show notes to where you can find all the information about the Melbourne Cycling Festival. If you are down under, definitely check it out, get involved. And if you want to, I'd love to hear a review of this event because this sounds like it's going to be just a lot of fun. Well, that's pretty much going to do it for the show. And look at the time. It's kind of pretty much the length of a regular show. So hopefully the sound of my voice with my throat issues hasn't grated on you too much. And I appreciate you sticking around. Listen, if you've got any questions or comments, please contact the show. And the best way to do that is by email. Our email address is thefredcast@gmail.com. Of course, we love to get not just text email, but we love to get your audio comments as well. So if you'd like to send those along in an email, please do. But there's other ways to do that as well. You can call the Fredcast listener hotline at area code 206-203-FRED. You can use our Skype, which is thefredcast. You can also call our Skype voicemail at area code 435-258-6373. That's 435-258-6FRED. And then finally, you can use the audio comment portion of the website. If you go to thefredcast.com and scroll down a little bit on the right-hand side where it says contact, there's also a link for sending us an audio comment. You can do that right through your computer, right through the website. And again, the website, www.thefredcast.com. And don't forget our Twitter feed. The Twitter username is TheFredcast. Finally, we hope that you'll go over to Podcast Alley and vote for us, because doing so increases the popularity of the show, and we love to get new listeners all the time. There's a link for that on the website. We'd also love it if you wrote an iTunes review or if you just told your friends when you're out on your club ride. So that's mostly going to do it for the show today. But as always, I've got PodSafe cycling music, and it comes to us, as it always does, from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. And this week, I'm stoked because this is probably one of my top five favorite artists of all time. Today, I've got a song from the incomparable Gary Moore. Gary Moore is known for his rock, blues guitar, and amazing artistry. Hope you enjoy this song. It's called Ain't Nobody, and it's by Gary Moore. I've got links in the show notes to where you can find Gary on iTunes, on the Pod Show site, and on his very own website. I'll be back in just a couple of days coming to you live from Las Vegas at Interbike. But between now and then, enjoy Gary Moore's music. But most of all, enjoy the ride.
Difference from what's real. Keep on running fast as you can. All you're gonna get's another man. Ain't nobody gonna love you like the way I do. Ain't nobody. yourself another man. Some other time, another place, but you know I just can't be replaced. Cause ain't nobody gonna love you like the way I do. Ain't nobody gonna love you all the whole night through. Ain't nobody gonna love you like the way I do. Ain't nobody gonna love you all the whole night through. Person to person, as you can, try to find yourself another man.